the misunderstanding of many lifetimes. Emptiness is without characteristics. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. Thus one can know oneself. Thus the self is completed. We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. With boundless wisdom, journey beyond this, forgetting accomplishments. Straightforwardly abandon stratagems and take on responsibility. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity, not a single atom of dust outside yourself. So for me, a great pleasure, also a great honor to be part of this winter training period with you. This morning, sitting in the morning sun, with clear blue sky and the sun streaming through us, feeling enormously grateful to be here, and also incredibly privileged, reflecting on all that brought each one of us to this place of practice. No small matter, and also no accident that we are here together in this configuration. The Buddha said, if you brush sleeves with a stranger on the street, however casually, you have some connection, some resonance with this person that is manifested from countless lifetimes. So here we are, and it's not an accident that we're together, good friends along the way, practicing together, and certainly when our minds open, or we have moments of forgetting ourselves in the activity of being done and doing whatever it is that we are doing and being done by, we forget ourselves. Important to remember that forgetting is made possible by the efforts of each one of us in this room. None of us is a spectator. Zen is not a spectator sport. Zen is a full participation, come out of the bleachers and play sport. So wherever you may be traversing, whatever six realms you may find yourself in, and certainly all of us are, include myself, traversing through the six realms, traversing wherever you find yourself as a bodhisattva, wherever you are, the ability to take joy or to bear that place is made possible by each person's effort. So I always say this during session or during our training periods, that each one of us in a certain kind of way is leading the retreat. Not that your mind state is leading the retreat necessarily, but the quality of attention and presence and determination and love that you exert in your practice is leading this retreat. And it is that wholehearted effort that each one of us makes. Wherever we may find ourselves, maybe surrounded by Indians, circling the wagons, thoughts buzzing around us like an angry mob of hornets, or in some great spacious open field of ease and well-being, some formless field of benefaction. It's made possible by each and every one of our efforts. So I, since I have a certain fondness for Zazen, I'm so grateful to be nourished and fed and supported to do this work, and also to find to be refreshed in the work by the group. So that's a quite a wonderful and mysterious thing. So we all have our oars in the water. We're all rowing together in one boat, all doing the best we can with wherever we find ourselves, best effort. And I think that sense of agency, or that sense of my my presentation or my effort or my best effort, knowing that it is felt so intimately by each one of us, empowers us. On the one hand, you could say, well, that's pretty discouraging, because if you look at the nature of what goes on in my mind, a lot of the time it ain't pretty, and I wouldn't want anybody to have to bear that. But there's something else, and that is that you, we, each one of us meets it as best we can. Each one of us sits upright and is present to it as best we can. And that effort that you make is your offering to the group. It's your offering to this great bouillabaisse, this big soup that we sit in, and it's a remarkable offering, because in however it is a presentation of how you care and how you love and how you understand. And we all care about something. We all care about something very deeply. And if we've touched and been touched by that which we care about, that which we really you could say love or cherish profoundly, we want to stand up for that, and we want to enact that, and we want to manifest that as best we can. And that enactment or that offering is a wonderful, generous thing. So also it is a source, traditionally thought, at least in my training in this bodhisattva way, to be a source of what we call bala paramita, or agency or power, not power in terms of exerting yourself over something or controlling or stifling or being rigid or being uptight, not that kind of control of a greedy king or queen, but a kind of a power that issues up from some deep mysterious place when you engage. Fully engage body and mind. There is some. You are empowered by something that is profoundly mysterious. Of course, we can't get our hands on it. Would be nice if we could bottle it and sell it. But it's a mysterious. It's a mysterious thing. But nevertheless, each one of us and everything that goes on is supported, held, permeated, and manifests nothing but this mysterious. Mysterious energy, or this mysterious aliveness. So when you come forward and give yourself over, you are, each one of us, manifesting one true nature, we could say. And it is our offering to the group. And we, as practitioners, as good friends along the way, drink of that offering. I do, certainly. I drink deeply of this atmosphere. And I'm refreshed and restored. And I find that I can bear what I could not bear alone. I can go places that I could not go alone. And I'm sure the same is true for you. We all come and go in clear spaces and difficult places, in collapsed paranoid spaces and incredibly beautiful, boundless, clear places. And I don't think any of us could easily bear the difficult places if we didn't have the support of good friends along the way. So my appreciation for our efforts and gratitude to hang out with you guys and to sit together. Every winter in my life, for the past, as long as I can remember, been 40 or so years now, we have... a winter training period. They go by different titles in different traditions, but basically it's a time when we agree as friends to hunker down together, to hunker down and to look into this great matter of where do we come from, why are we here, and where are we going. So every winter in most Zen traditions we have some kind of a training period, and so this is both brand new, but also deeply familiar to me. In the Korean tradition, in the Korean monastic tradition, this, we would sit every winter for 90 days, just like this. Sit and walk together and eat together and suffer together and take joy together and go crazy together and do it as a group. And one of the wonderful things about it was that we really we really depended on one another to do it. So we would sit. The traditional training period was called Kyolche in the Korean Zen tradition. Kyolche means tight, not uptight, but tight dharma, tight dharma, or really holding the nose of your of your horse from wandering off into the weeds and staying, you know, moment by moment, step by step, as best you can on the way. So Kyolche was called tight dharma. In the traditional training, I had good fortune to do it both in Korean monasteries, and also we adapted this way of life in at our Zen center for all the time I lived there, the 20 years I lived there. So we would hunker down. And there would be a few of us who were through hikers, depending on the winter, 5, 10 or so, or 15. And people would come and go. We would say, well, you have to commit for a certain block of time to come, whether it was a day or to come into the Zendo. We had to commit to a certain block of time. And there would be through hikers, those of us who were sitting through, and those of us and those who came and supported us. I always loved it when people came. You know, I felt like cavalry arrived in the nick of time, some reinforcements, and I would, however long they stayed, I would appreciate them. So the traditional then was this 90-day training period of doing this, called Kyolche or Tight Dharma, and it was interspersed by what was called Heije. Heije means loose or relaxed dharma. So traditionally in the Korean monastic system, there were periods in the winter of disciplined training, of really trying to follow sila and trying to tie the buffalo down so he could take his medicine. And then there were relaxed periods where you could relax and kind of pursue the fragrant grasses and return following the falling flowers, a time of really opening and pursuing whatever was alive for you. And in those periods, some people studied calligraphy, and some people sat by themselves quietly, and others studied sutra. One of the really nice things about the Korean system is that in the temples in Korea, in the mountains, there are all kinds of practices going on. So it's not just a Zen temple. There's a Zendo usually in the back, a very, very simple room with platforms in the back of the temple complex in a very quiet, removed area. And the people who were committed to Zen practice would engage in these long training periods and then more relaxed periods. But other people would be there studying sutras and practicing Nembutsu and doing different practices. And I myself have a great appreciation and fondness for all of the many ways of practice, chanting practice and dharma study and so forth. But what strikes me is this period called Kyolche or Tight Dharma was interspersed with a period of relaxed or open dharma. So there were these periods of contraction and expansion and contraction and expansion. And one of the things that we are taught again and again, and have been reminded by my friends, my colleagues sitting here with me, is that each thing has it, and each thing is a complete manifestation of the whole. Joshua's talking about each one by one. Each thing is, as we say, perfectly complete. One by one, each thing is a portal through that specific facet of the gem into the big, or into the vast, or into an unlimited or an unimpeded world. So that's the heart of koan study, and also the heart of shikantaza practice, that we, through some particularness that we account, make or touch to, what does it say, contact phenomena with total sincerity. So any phenomena or any happening on our cushion that we contact with total sincerity is an opportunity to realize something quite marvelous and beyond actually comprehension and beyond words, something of utmost value and beauty and meaning. So Kyolche Heije was this softening and opening, and also practicing very forcefully in this way of being both disciplined and open-hearted at the same time is certainly metaphor for our kyoche here. It's not an uptight dharma, but it is a time to really extend yourself and to push yourself and to allow yourself to enter into places that otherwise you might not feel safe to enter. And again and again and again in our practice, we testify to the same thing, little by little, and then all at once, that the content of our experience, the content of any experience, is something mysterious and vast and unknowable, but palpably so, palpably so. So we are practicing in a sense Kyoche Heije here, since we are all wayfarers. Kyoche, we are one-pointedly. Sansini, my root teacher, said, using the mind like a point of a needle embroidering, and maintaining a mind as vast and wide as space, a mind like the sky, and the sky certainly does not hinder the white clouds coming or going, allows all things to pass through it. So we sit in Zazen, in Shikantaza, in koan study, however we are sitting with this mixture of Kyoche Heije. We could say Heije is openness of mind, or guilelessness, or innocence, or we might call it Vipassana. And Kyoche is concentration. And not concentration for its own sake, but concentration because we know that if we want to experience something, or know something, or be intimate with something, or taste it, through and through, not as an observer from a safe, mindful distance, but to practice a deeper, a more compelling and more rich kind of mindfulness, which is a kind of no-minded mindfulness, which is no mind whatsoever, no gap, no barrier whatsoever. This practice of both being grounded and concentrated and open at the same time is of a wonderful importance. Certainly we do it in our lives. Kyoche Heije, we come to Sesshin and we go. There is a great deal of coming and going, and we practice it here. The Buddha actually said quite specifically that this tight dharma and this relaxed openness of mind, when they are brought into some kind of balance, like a tuning, or tuning a string, a guitar string, that it is that place of balance between the softness and openness of mind and the firmness and the determination to abide with your breath, breath by breath, each breath having a very clear beginning, a middle, and end, each breath having a very, very, very clear arising out of or being born out of this, we call it Tathagata Garbha, the womb of the Buddha. Womb of the Buddha is a mysterious, fertile, a dimensionless space of pure possibility. And it has the intelligence and love to be able to manifest in any way. Look at life, all of life that we, nothing but this manifestation. So we sit and we are firm and we are steadfast and we practice Fudo Myo, the one who just doesn't move, and not in a rigid way. And this, hopefully, this shamatha, or this concentration, or this calm abiding, leads us into absorption, an absorption that has no inside or outside. And certainly the entry point into this way of practice or tune of the guitar string in our practice is the combination of openness and precision. And that balance between openness and precision is our heart mind. Shin kokoro, we say in the Japanese, a way of talking about it. Heart mind, mind heart. Heart mind, in that it is a tender, and it is a soft, and it is a resonant space. And when we make contact with or touch and or touched by whatever it is that's going on. In that place of softness or ta or heartfelt encounter, there is a wonderful synapse that takes place. The synapse is the place of life affirming itself. Life wants to maximize itself through us, and it affirms itself through this synapse of coming upon itself. Or Aiken Roshi, when I sat with him in the early days in Maui in the 70s, used to say, God falls in love with her particular expression again and again and again. What a wonderful thing. And we too have this capacity to fall in love with what we encounter if we bring this kind of openness and sincerity to it. And it is that is the place of transformation, of possibility. So I was talking before about a Shikan Taza, a practice I'm reluctant to open my mouth about these matters in front of people here who know quite a bit more about it than I do, but doesn't stop me. I jabber on anyway. But this place of Ta, of Shikan, we pause, we settle, we allow mind to settle into itself, and we Kan, we perceive or we know or we not know as an object, but know much, much more intimately, Shikan Ta. And in that place of knowing or of heart, open heart and calm abiding presence, inevitably we are touched and we touch something. Doesn't matter what it is. It could be a beautiful weather. It could be a fierce storm or dense, confusing fog. But in those moments, when in that space of openness, we touch something and are touched by it, and there is synapse and there is movement, and we are our practice and our way as practitioners of the Buddha Dharma is affirmed. And that affirmation needs no thought whatsoever. Of course, thought or kana zen, insight into a word where the word is nothing but our reality, is wonderful, wonderful practice. But in the moment of synapse, there is no thought necessary. It's true because there isn't anything else. And we all nod quietly to ourselves. And we all, each in our own way, are so grateful to have been, to touch and be touched by the Dharma. What did Steve say in the beginning? A superb time to let Buddha Dharma enter mud and water. what did David say? He said repetition and renewal again and again. We do the same thing and we are refreshed and renewed in some way. We meet it in some fresh way and are renewed and restored. And also challenged by what we then have to experience. And what did... as I can recall. What did Josh say? Josh said it's possible to include more and more and more so that nothing's left out, message of the Dogen. And what did Melissa say? Melissa said at least a piece of what she said, or a tiny little piece that I, like a little pack rat, went home to my... I have pack rats in my cabin in the mountain. You know, they're quite wonderful. They're an endangered species, so I'm quite fond of them. And they make their home in my little cabin. I live in this little hermitage in the middle of 800 acres. My companions are the Kentucky wood rat. The Kentucky wood rat loves shiny things. I like shiny things too, and I take them home. And, you know, like I'll take a little something that Melissa said, and I'll take it home. And you know, or wood rats will take juji fruit gum wrappers that I leave, or if I leave some bottle caps out, they'll take them and they'll line their nest with shiny bright objects that they have taken. Or sometimes in the summer when I come upon their nests are lined with flowers, all different colored flowers and bright gum wrappers and bottle caps and little paper clips and stuff like that. So I, last night as I was up doing my midnight practice of not being able to sleep, I was feeling, oh, what a wonderful thing. I'm a bit of a wood rat, and I, I brought a shiny thing home with me. Melissa said, be unstained, be purely this way. You can manage it, even if you think you can't, you can. I thought, oh, I'll put that in my name. I was lying in bed. I don't know. The hour of the wolf, 2 a.m, is a hard time for me. It's a kind of often a time where I'm in this wild, raw, untamable energy that's both wonderful and terrifying. So I try to remember that there are always new ways of working with it. So I thought, well, it's what's the unstainedness of it? Or how do I include this? I actually called on my friends with great sincerity because I was, as we all are, on our knees in the face of it, or crawling on broken glass at times. And then I remembered, hey, that guy Steve, he's been to these places. He says you can do it. I said, well, maybe I should listen to him. And that guy David, this buddy of mine who I keep hanging out with, said, you know, you find yourself in it again and again and again and again and again, but it will refresh itself in some timeless, new, sudden way that you never expected that's possible. And Josh said, you know, you can include this shit. And when since I have some familiarity with where my compadres have come from in the long journey of their life, I know they're not bullshitting me. So I take good faith in their words, and I enjoy my little shiny objects, and I am restored. Hi.
So I invite us all to sit comfortably and to enter into the practice of Dharma dialogue. And the invitation here is for us to come forward as we are. As George said, the gift we give each other is not some great clarity, but the presence. So I invite us to come forward to share reactions. What touched you? What confused you? What enlightened you? To share with all of us. Susan and Christine.
The thing that really grabbed me was one of the first sentences in the reading. It mysteriously eliminates all disgrace.
Praise God.
Inward, I think, oh no, don't do that, because then all this disgraceful behavior and failure to act and zaniness and inattention will be revealed, and you'll be disgraced, and that'll be the end of it. And I was a few days back, I was comparing the life of Zen to the game of Candyland, and in terms of disgrace, I thought, you know, if you could just get a get out of disgrace free car, then you could stand to move a little bit and look a little harder,
yeah,
and include a little bit more. So I'm really attracted to this idea of mysteriously eliminating all disgrace. And I would love to have you address that concept for me.
Thanks. Well, I spend a lot of time working on this koan. As we all do, I'm sure. One of the things that occurs to me as you talk, there's so many aspects to it, but one is the idea of disgrace. I think eliminating the idea of disgrace is one thing, and the aliveness of that place of total body cringe or vulnerability is a tremendous jewel. So the idea is always problematic, because then I'm, you know, look, you failed again, you're a bad 10th student, you lose, me, wrong, look. but the energy of it, to enter into the aliveness of it, is another matter. And that does truly eliminate disgrace, and the way out is through. And in the Zen tradition, that place, we call it that place of tremendous vulnerability that's inside of all of us is such a resource and also such a challenge, because our reactivity, our fighting, and so forth and so on. So we are invited, actually, especially in the context of retreat, to dare to at least dabble around in the periphery of it, if not enter in to that heartland. It's called the imperative, because the mind says, if you go there, all is lost. So the price of admission is the mind that says this is wrong and bad. And of course, the resource, as it is in all of our experience, that when you enter, you find there is one in the midst of that who was never disgraced. And it's such a place of understanding and love and tenderness. So it's it's revered in Zen, what you brought up, and treated with not lightly.
It's so wonderful to hear you. I've heard your name, chanted your name. I've heard a lot about you from David, and I had planned to go to one retreat and wasn't able to make it because I was sick at your house. And so you were sitting here each day, and I thought, well, the more you sat there and didn't say anything, the more mysterious you seemed. And I noticed I would project things onto you. And it was like, oh, okay. And so I was so excited to hear you today. And I want to say, my response is, I've spent a lot of time kneeling on broken glass, the flowers, the joy I can relate to a pack rat. I am so deeply nourished by your humility in a way I can't quite put into words, but it brings me to tears.
Oh, well, look.
And I love what you just said, because I have spent so long letting my mind lacerate my heart. And in this coming and going sesshin, my heart is flowering. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Fred.
Those of you who have spent much of the last 2 weeks here, or any time at all, I'm probably aware that I have been falling apart. And when I first started falling apart, I felt like I could not endure the disgrace of doing it in the Zendo. And I left. And was firmly but compassionately brought back to the Zendo. And I just want everyone to know that I could not have fallen apart without the support of everybody who was here and who came and who left. This dynamic container supported me in ways that I could never have imagined. And so I have a new appreciation for the power of Sangha and that sort of unqualifiable support.
Thank you.
Steve.
So very nice to sit with you, George.
Yeah, nice to see you again.
And
yeah, here we are.
Everyone else here, it's wonderful to sit with this Sangha. You said something early in your teisho about having a certain fondness for Zazen. What's it been, 50 years, 60 years? So, it has been my experience, not always, but somewhat frequently, that it's not always fondness that drives me to the cushion. It's more like a scourge. And I want to say that you talk about a mysterious processing or something that goes on the cushion. And I find this to be important, to be able to deal with, if you'll allow me this term, and I am exaggerating, but I will use it anyway. It's sort of like the horror of daily life. And maybe it's because, you know, I'm overly sensitive to things that happen around me, but there are things that happen around me that just bother me, they may be small bad things, they may be large bad things, whatever. And it's like something happens on the cushion that allows me to continue on, okay? So I'm wondering if you would perhaps speak or comment about maybe that processing that happens on the cushion.
So, like, what happens on the cushion, you're asking?
Well, not so much what happens, but sort of like, again, this... it's sort of like a space where the stuff that we carry with us gets played out. And it's like a safe zone. You know, it's like this zone where all the demons and all of the goddesses and all the rest of it just get up, you know, they get to get up and play with each other. you know what I'm saying? And then,
yes.
Because because they've done the dance, it gives me the ability to go on to face life.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me, I don't know, the associative process is mysterious, like everything. And I was on a long pilgrimage with my Zumi Roshi and my teacher Sansan in Korea. We went to all of the temples, and I was talking to Roshi in this way, like, "Well, give me the explanation, man. Come on, give me the 29 red, 34 left, two right, click, open." And I was, asking him these same kind of heartfelt questions, and he said, it might be. He never, it might be helpful. He said, it might be helpful if you consider changing the question to a statement. Then, a wonderful presentation, thank you.
I also think of teaching for Musong, who practiced with Sinsanim and ran the temple that this other Zen group I was in rented for a time. And he was explaining the kitchen. I was on kitchen duty, and he said, so here's the knives, here's the food, and here's the compost. And I said, does everything go in the compost? And he said, oh, everything except the humans. They compost in the Zendo. So everything comes up and does what it does. Yeah, thank you. Josh?
I just want to appreciate the image of the Dharma pack rat. Words are all inclusive. Immediately affirm not to. Oh, justice is it.
Yeah, gotta decorate the nest with something. Yeah, Jimmy.
Well, I'll speak to that pack rat too. It's such a wonderful assistant to us, I think. Often I'll hear some little gem and I'll notice, oh, that's a shiny bit. I don't know what its use is, but I'm going to keep that. And so often, later on, it will like glint and I'll go, oh, that's what it's for. Yeah. Other times, no, and every once in a while I clean out the nest. But to be able to count on that little pack rat to help you, I think, is pretty great. even if you don't know what it's for.
Well, and I think, too, that this possibility of when we're in a really dark place to consider that someone may have said something, or that the teaching might actually apply here. Like, you know, what, and actually looking around and say, what, how, you know, oh, maybe I can, you know, not as something that fixes it, but in that place that there are resources that actually are in us from chanting and the sutra service, from listening to these Dharma talks. I love how you talk about stuff we collect and, well, God, that really stuck with me. And and then at some moment, you know, some phrase or something comes to save us and you remember Melissa's voice or George. And it's like, oh, not alone. Right, and the resource of the Dharma reveals itself with no effort.
And I just want to add to this a little bit and just take it in a slightly different direction, because I'm really appreciating the image of the pack rat, too. I just saw that little nest with all the flowers and the gum wrappers. And so it there's also the aspect of all these things we collect that they're ultimately useless. They wear themselves out, but they're so pretty. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to it's okay in this practice, which apparently can be, you know, very austere, very spare, to delight. You know, this is the Sambhogakaya again. It doesn't have to have a meaning. It doesn't have to be, you know, just the recollection itself is, oh right, there's more, and I don't have to understand this. I never have to make it make sense. But yum, 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 as Ram Dass said after his stroke, when he couldn't come up with words to say how great everything was, this guy who was so into words and so articulate, and all he could say was, yum, yum, yum. That always touches me, because we're all really good with words, and someday maybe we won't be. But the feeling of love that those words are animated by, the brightness, that's what we can decorate our nests with that.
Yeah. And we imagine grace and disgrace stand in opposition, and as James Ford reminds us, if you're lucky, your heart will break. That's the grace, the broke, open heart. And as Brother Leonard Cohen reminds us, the crack is how the light gets in. So these misunderstandings of many lifetimes, these 500 lives as a fox, are 500 lives of grace, even amid the pain.
So last one.
thank you, George. I was particularly appreciating how you took the these two kinds of practice periods, the tight practice and the open practice, and turned it into this image of the vast empty sky not impeding the clouds, mm-hmm. right? And how you shared some of the more difficult content that sometimes appears in the mind, right? Yes. And this practice of being fully present to the mm-hmm. to the difficult arisings, and the practice of not impeding those, right? Mm-hmm. Not holding right. on to them, letting them just come and go, and willingness. What can we do? But still, there is a willingness.
Try a lot of things.
Right, right. Yeah. But nonetheless, yeah. there's a willingness to be with, I think, you know, and not need to. And even when we're, you know, trying to impede the clouds, mm-hmm. you know, there's this not impeding.
Especially
then. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You know that the I'm just struck by what you just said, Steve, and what Josh said before, and still lingering with the Cuban cigar a little bit, and the party. We will not be having a party here tonight, just in case you were looking forward to that. Well, we will be having a party. This is the party. This is how we do it. This is our party.
Good news and bad news. There is a party. Bad news, this is it.
And that energy force that's carrying us, that we're just participating in, that we're not responsible for, means that when we encounter disgrace, we don't use it as a technique. You don't use being with disgrace. I know this is where you were going, as a technique in order to get to grace, right? Because even though disgrace and grace really are two sides of one thing, if we do it, you know, like a friend, I'm so touched by what you said. You just made me cry. If we come to the Zendo and we're in distress because it's going to fix us, but that isn't what you did. You came to the Zendo in distress, period. That's the whole practice right there. And so we feel our disgrace fully. We feel every single one of us in this room has fucked up endlessly and will continue to do so. Sorry for the prediction, but you know, it's just the way it is. So to not lean too far into even having whiskey and a cigar as a technique, right, to help save us from our goodness. But to really get to know that goodness as the straitjacket it is. To get to know everything as the straitjacket it is. And just come and sit and in the company of great friends.
Well, and then this straitjacket, in the straitjacket of our Zazen, we are melted down. We are transformed in the very place where I will die if it is one more moment. And then we support each other and need each other and are transformed by each other. Thank you.